The cannons fire again. Not in triumph, not in celebration. In desperation. Smoke crawls through narrow streets, thick enough to sting the eyes and catch in the throat. Men shout orders that collide with one another and dissolve into noise. Somewhere nearby, a crowd is screaming. Not chanting, not cheering. Screaming. And in the middle of this chaos stands a young officer. He's not famous. He holds no great title. He's not even particularly liked. But he is calm. He watches the movement of men and horses the way others might watch a chessboard. He listens, not to the shouting, but to what the shouting reveals. And then, almost quietly, he gives an order. Cannons are repositioned. Angles are adjusted. Timing is chosen. Within hours, the chaos begins to bend. This single decision will change his life, and in time, it will change Europe.
Welcome to the Members in the Room podcast, where we share real-life stories about leadership and their underlying human behavior rooted in science and research. We unpack and interpret the evolutionary forces behind it to help you to better lead your people for outstanding business results.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Members in the Room, where we explore leadership lessons that stand the test of time. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, CEO of Mammoth Leadership Sciences. If you have listened to this podcast before, you know we've always explored leadership through the lens of evolutionary psychology, neuroscience, and human behavior. We've talked about power, hierarchy, bias, and the instincts that quietly shape how leaders rise and fall. In these last 75 episodes, we covered a lot of science. We covered what I call the essence of everything important as it relates to the biological, neuroscientific, and evolutionary psychological aspects of the human behavior of leadership, of leading and following others. Of course, you can always add more, but based on my 30 years' experience as biologist, neuroscientist, and business leader, we got it. Now, what changes today is not what we examine, but how we examine it. Going forward, we're going to do this through history. Not as lessons, not as frameworks, not as lists of do's and don'ts, but as real stories lived by real people making real decisions under pressure. Because history is where human instincts show up without filters. There are no personality assessments, no leadership models. Just fear, ambition, loyalty, overconfidence, and power playing out in real time. And beneath all of it, the mammoth. Today we begin a multi-episode journey through the rise and fall of Napoleon Bonaparte. Not to glorify him, not to condemn him, but to understand why he succeeded when he did, and why, eventually, he didn't. To understand Napoleon, we need to step back, because Napoleon does not emerge from strength. He emerges from collapse. By 1793, France has been in revolution for 4 years. The king has been executed, the monarchy dismantled, the old social order ripped apart so completely that even its memory feels dangerous. But what replaces it is not clarity, it's instability. Power shifts constantly. Political factions devour one another. Yesterday's heroes becomes today's traitors. Paris lives in a permanent state of anxiety where loyalty is uncertain and survival feels provisional. Beyond France's border, the situation is no better. Austria, Prussia, Britain, Spain. Europe's monarchies see the revolution as an infection that must be contained. France is at war on multiple fronts, fighting for its existence against enemies who want the old world restored. Inside the country, fear takes on a different shape. Farmers worry about food. Merchants worry about confiscation. Citizens worry about saying the wrong thing to the wrong person. This is not a society debating ideas. It's a society trying to survive itself. And when humans live under sustained threat like this, something predictable happens inside the brain. Uncertainty becomes unbearable. The mind narrows. Long-term ideals lose their grip, replaced by a desperate need for order and direction. Under these conditions, people stop asking who is right and start asking who can act. This is not a weakness, it's adaptation. In our evolutionary past, moments of existential danger demanded fast coordination. Groups that hesitated didn't survive. Groups that rallied around decisive leadership did. So, when societies fracture, they don't just lose leaders, they begin searching for new ones. And Napoleon Bonaparte doesn't look like a future leader of France. He does not sound like one either. He's Corsican. He speaks French with an accent that never quite disappears. In Parisian society, that alone marks him as an outsider. His family belongs to the lower ranks of the nobility, noble enough to resent the elites, poor enough to never be accepted by them. Napoleon learns early what it feels like to stand apart. He is socially awkward, intensely focused, uninterested in charm or small talk. What he does have, though, is discipline and an almost obsessive relationship with detail. While others debate politics, Napoleon studies artillery. While fellow officers chase recognition, he memorizes terrain, angles, and supply routes. He thinks in mechanics, not emotions. In stable systems, this personality rarely rises quickly. Status is inherited. Networks matter more than skill. But revolutionary France is not stable. Old hierarchies have collapsed. New ones haven't formed yet. And when that happens, human groups instinctively begin to resort themselves based on usefulness, not lineage. Not manners, but contribution. Napoleon fits this moment perfectly. He doesn't need to dominate anyone. He just needs to be right. That moment arrives in 1793 in the southern port city of Toulon. Toulon is France's most important naval base in the Mediterranean. When royalist forces inside the city hand it over to the British, the implications are enormous. If Toulon is lost, Britain gains a permanent military foothold on French soil. For the revolutionary government, this is an existential threat. French forces surround the city, but nothing works. Commanders argue, plans stall, days pass. Napoleon, still young and relatively unknown, is assigned to oversee artillery. He studies the terrain. While others focus on the city walls, Napoleon notices the harbor. He realizes that if artillery controls the heights overlooking the port, ships become trapped. The city becomes indefensible. It's a risky idea. It requires speed, and it requires someone willing to act. Napoleon moves. Cannons are dragged into position under fire. Batteries are established. When the guns open fire, the effect is immediate. British ships withdraw. The city falls. Toulon is retaken. And something else happens. Under extreme threat, the human nervous system searches for control. When someone acts decisively and chaos recedes, fear circuits quiet, confidence returns. The brain associates that person with safety. Napoleon doesn't just win a battle. He becomes visible. He is promoted. He's noticed. He's remembered. And then, after Toulon, Napoleon is no longer invisible. Early success does not simply reward behavior. It teaches the brain what to trust. Decisive action under pressure activates reward circuits. Stress hormones fall. Confidence grows. Speed begins to feel safe. Once individuals who act decisively and succeed are more likely to be followed. Confidence fuels momentum. Napoleon trusts his judgment more. He moves faster, he hesitates less. At this stage, his confidence is grounded in reality. But the brain does not distinguish between contextual success and personal infallibility. It simply learns this worked. All right, let's reflect a bit. This first chapter of Napoleon's story is not about greatness. It's about conditions. France was not looking for a hero. It was looking for relief. Relief from fear, relief from chaos, relief from uncertainty. Napoleon provided that relief, first through competence, then through decisiveness, and finally through force. But that we cover next time. All right, this was it for today. If this episode resonated, please subscribe, rate, and share with anyone in your network interested in leadership. And lastly, if you want more, you can order my book. It has the same title of this podcast, The Mammoth in the Room. It's a practical roadmap showing how great leaders and their teams embrace evolutionary truths for outstanding business results. And it does that across three sections, on people, on strategy, and on implementation. Until next time, lead wisely, think critically, and don't let ancient instincts hijack your modern leadership. I'm Nicholas Bocconi, and this is The Mammoth in the Room. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy this content, don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you on the next episode of The Mammoth in the Room.